And joining us on Perspectives today is Rajia Hasib. Rajia is the author of the new book, Novel in the Language of Miracles. And it's a very interesting book. We're going to talk a little bit about that in just a minute. But I want to give you a little bit of a background on Rajia. Rajia was born and raised in Alexandria, Virginia, Egypt, before moving to the U.S. at the tender age of 23. A decade later, she returned to college to study English, writing, and literature, and pursued her lifelong dream of becoming a writer. She holds a BA and an MA in English, both from Marshall University. After graduation, she worked briefly as a part-time instructor of English at Marshall University, teaching an introduction to creative writing as well as a class on post-colonial literature. She lives in Charleston, West Virginia, with her husband and two children. Rajia, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, as I mentioned just a little while ago, your background and the fact that you moved here at the age of 23, a lot of people, when they think of people immigrating to the United States, they're thinking about, you know, their parents moved here and they came here when they were children. But at the age of 23, was that a little bit difficult for you, or how different was that for you moving over to a new country?
It was somewhat of a romantic move. I moved because my husband moved here.
Okay.
I just followed him. He's a doctor, and he came here to get his medical training. It was not as difficult as it might have been, mainly because I had a Western upbringing and education, or Westernized upbringing and education. I went to a German school in Alexandria for 14 years. I had German nuns and German teachers supervising the school. As I was growing up, my parents were very liberal and really westernized in their ideas as well. So it wasn't such a harsh transition for me, mainly because I was prepared for it.
We are visiting with Rajia Hasib. She is the author of the book, Novel in the Language of Miracles. Now, you mentioned going to school in Alexandria and living in Alexandria, and we want to tell our audience it's not Virginia, it's Egypt. And for the benefit of our listeners, including myself, tell us a little bit about Alexandria of Egypt, because a lot of us have, I guess, a stereotype vision of what Egypt looks like. We think of the pyramids, we think of the Sphinx, and that's it.
Yes, I totally understand that. I remember when I was growing up, I used to have pen pals in Europe, and they always asked things like, oh, do you guys ride camels down the streets? Do you have a little pyramid somewhere next door? And no, we don't. It's Alexandria is the second biggest city in Egypt. Its population is, I think, over 4 million, probably more now. It's a coastal town. It's by the Mediterranean. It was built by Alexander the Great, so it's named after him, as many other Alexandrias around the world were. And it's a kind of a vacation city for a lot of people in Egypt. A big city, big city.
And you got your training there. You mentioned you got a lot of Western education there. Are there a lot of students who get their training there and then come to the United States?
Well, I didn't aim to come to the United States at first. What happens in Egypt is a lot of people choose to send their children to private schools, and that's partly because the public education system is, especially for grade schools and up to high school, is really struggling. I mean, Egypt is not the wealthiest country, obviously. So most people, even just regular middle-class people, will opt to send their kids to private schools. Now, those private schools are mostly schools that are either have a British affiliation or a German affiliation or a French affiliation. So they are westernized schools. And they also have the added advantage of teaching multiple foreign languages, which in Egypt is a huge plus because Egypt's economy relies so much on tourism. So it helps to know a couple of foreign languages at least. So my Western education just was part of the result of the fact that my parents wanted to send my sister and me to a good private school, and one of the best schools at the time in Alexandria was this German school that was partly funded by the German government and that had it was a Catholic school, so we had nuns living there. And we had German teachers come from Germany to teach us all subjects. And this is where I learned my English also, by the way. So it was a school that offered three foreign languages, English and German and French. So that was the purpose or the idea behind it. The fact that it ended up indirectly preparing me for immigrating to the United States was just kind of a very good stroke of luck for me.
Now, one more question about Alexandria. And you mentioned that because of the school system there, a lot of parents want to send their children to private schools. And that raises another, I guess, topic of stereotyping that people might have. They'll say, well, I thought that people were struggling in Egypt and other parts of the Middle East, and the fact that because of the poverty or lack of educational system, they can't afford to send their children to better schools.
Well, poor people cannot, but Egypt has a vast degree of kind of, we have a lot of people in the middle class, we have a lot of people in the upper class. So the majority of Egyptians would not be able to send their kids to private schools, but there's a huge chunk of Egyptians who are middle class people who can afford private schools, and you also have a degree of many options to choose from when you're talking about private schools. So they're not all, we're not talking about, you know, $10,000 a year or something like that, as you would have to pay here if you wanted to send your kids to a prep school or something like that. They're relatively affordable. At the time when I was growing up, it was my school in particular, and it was partly affordable because it was partly funded by the German government as well. So it's not like, it's not what you think. It's not like it costs a huge amount of money to send your kids to these schools.
We are visiting with Rajia Hasib. She is the author of the novel In the Language of Miracles, and this is her debut novel. And In the Language of Miracles was published August of 2015, and basically, I'm not going to give it away, but the novel is set in the fictional town of New Jersey, Somerset, New Jersey, and that is where an Egyptian-American family has lived for years. They're enjoying the full potential of the American dream, as Rajia was mentioning earlier, that lured them to the United States decades earlier. And the family, correct me if I'm right here, Rajia, Samir and Nagla al-Minshawi?
Yes.
Okay. Their lives, they're living the great American dream, but suddenly that dream is like they're woken and they're shattered because all of a sudden it turns into a nightmare. Their oldest son commits a crime that leaves him, as well as the daughters of the Bradsteins, their neighbors and best friends, dead. It's set a year after the crime. The novel follows the family during the 5 days prior to the memorial service that the Bradstreets are planning to host in order to mark the anniversary of their daughter's death. And Khaled, is that the...
Yes.
Khaled, their surviving son, he's forced to reexamine his beliefs, responsibilities, and place of the changing world. Central to his struggles is his grandmother, Ishan, armed with incense, prayers, talismans, and an unyielding determination to stop the unraveling of her daughter's family. She is either Khaled's only hope of salvation or the embodiment of everything he must flee if he is ever to find himself. So it's a very interesting story set. I mean, it could happen. It could be any family, but it happens to this family, and the importance, again, of family, the grandmother and what she does and the old ways, how they're doing. So it could be, again, any family, but this is set, obviously, with Egyptian-Americans because that is where Rajia comes from. But Rajia, one of the things that I want to bring up, and some people ask me about this, is the fact that when you're reading a story or a novel about immigrants, you're usually thinking of either Mexican immigrants or immigrants from Irish immigrants in the old days, but an Egyptian immigrant, that's really a different topic, and it really attracts the reader. And the cover is beautiful, and you look at it and you go, wow, this is interesting. And once you start reading, well, the trap is set and you're off to go. So tell us about, how did you come about this idea? Were you thinking about this when you had moved here and experiencing everything that you did the 10 years prior to writing the novel?
The novel, actually, the idea goes back to something I was thinking about in 2010. I moved here in 98, so that was obviously pre-9/11. So I got to experience that shift in perspective that people had of their perception of Muslims. And for years afterwards, I was thinking about what Muslims are supposed to do or are required to do in order to somehow respond to this horrific attack, terrorist attack. Are we not doing enough? Are we not voicing our opposition to such terrorism loudly enough? And then in 2010 came the Ground Zero Mosque controversy. I don't know if you remember that. That was when there was the intention to build a cultural center in Manhattan, an Islamic cultural center/mosque, that was supposed to promote interfaith dialogue and understanding. And at the time, it became a huge controversy, and people protested against it because they thought it would be an affront to all the victims of the terrorist attacks to have an Islamic center so close to ground zero. So I started thinking about this novel in 2010, partly as a response to this whole controversy, because I was very interested in the idea of apology and in what we are required to do and how and whether or not it was even possible to apologize for something as horrific as 9/11.
We are visiting with Rajia Hasib. She is the author of the novel In the Language of Miracles. And what you're talking about right now, after 9/11, one of the reviews, I think it was Bustle.com, and they said something about the fact that you're writing with authority, uncommon and debut writers. However, in this important book, you weave the beauty of Arabic culture with the harsh realities of modern American life. And this is something that I think, I don't know, you may have struggled with, but it opens up the eyes of readers and perhaps Americans who are not familiar with the Arabic culture or Egyptian culture, and the fact that you bring this to the reader in your novel, and again, mixing in the realities of America and some of the pictures that people have of America in general. Was that a problem as far as, you know, introducing the Arabic culture to your friends, families, and the fact that the novel is set where you have American neighbors who become very good friends, but then something happens?
It wasn't a problem. It was a challenge. It was a challenge. But I think that's what makes it, as you mentioned, different from, let's say, the experience of Latin American immigrants or any other or Irish immigrants, like you mentioned. When we're talking about when we have the protagonists who are Egyptian and who are Muslim originally Egyptian, we have to face all these new kinds of challenges. And I faced them when I was writing mainly because I know that the readers will have preconceived ideas of Muslims. And I didn't, and it was challenging to present those characters and to hope that the reader will empathize with them, even though I set them up in a way that does not make them totally innocent. It was not, so my intention was specifically to avoid being some sort of apologetic and saying, oh, we're all such nice people and we do nothing wrong. So that was part of the challenge, how to present those characters and to be honest in the presentation and to respect the authenticity of the characters, and at the same time, how to present the American reader with facts that he or she may find interesting and with insights into the culture that he or she may not be familiar with, without alienating them.
First of all, I want to reintroduce you again, Rajia Hasib, author of In the Language of Miracles. When I was describing the novel, I mentioned that grandmother in the novel plays a very big role. And I want you to explain to us, and because, again, this could happen to any family, but you're coming to America, you learn, your children learn about American culture, they start listening to Western music, not country Western, but from the West, American music and American literature, and just being blended in America. And then all of a sudden, here's your grandmother, and she is old world Egyptian grandmother. She has probably not very good English, and she's bringing her culture and she's trying to work it into the grandchildren, especially the son, the youngest son there. So just that set, if you could just take us from there, because a lot of us can relate if we have a grandmother or a grandfather who is here from their, quote, mother country.
Yes, that was one of the parts I enjoyed the most, I think, about writing this story, is the presentation of the grandmother. Because as you said, everyone would relate to that to a certain degree. Even if the grandparents were not from a different country, you still have the generational difference and the way the grandmother would, is, or the typical grandmother, wants to protect her grandchildren and kind of showers them with love and protect all the ways that you can think of to make their lives easier. But then if you have an immigrant family, or even, as you said, a family that has grandparents who were the first generation immigrants, you always have that old world culture brought in, and the way the grandparents want to at least present the culture to their grandkids or kids, if not necessarily influence them. In the in my novel, the grandmother would like to influence her grandkids and to turn them into into kids that are more Egyptian than they can be. And I think one of the interesting things that always happens when you're watching this dynamic is that the grandparents or the even the first-generation immigrants, in this case the parents themselves, don't always appreciate the fact that the kids who were born and raised here are American. I mean, they have their American, maybe they have a different background, but the background is always kind of like an ethnicity, but they're never going to react to things the same way the parents would or the grandparents would. So in the case of the grandmother in my novel, she comes to the house of her daughter who has, she watches the family that has kind of undergone this tragedy in the previous year, and she wants to help, but the ways she has, she offers, are all old-world ways. She comes and she prays for them, and she twirls incense around the house, and she wants to teach the kids to pronounce Arabic words correctly. So she's a very interesting character, but she's also a very loving character. And I think that shows, and I think people relate to that in terms of any mother or grandmother figure that you can think of.
And I think, as you mentioned, it could relate to anybody, because we have families here on the border who have Hispanic, Mexican grandparents, and then the grandchild does not know how to speak Spanish. And so that frustrates the grandmother or the grandfather, because they're saying, well, they're forgetting the culture, they're forgetting the ways, and I'm trying to help out. And it's a two-way street. The grandmother wants to communicate with the child, and the child can't understand what the grandmother is saying. So it puts up a different challenge, or if you want to accept that challenge, it turns out for the best. Now, what I wanted to know also, I thought this was interesting, is you, in the bio, you mentioned that you have half a shelf in your office dedicated to discarded versions of In the Language of Miracles, all which you wrote while you were earning your MA and working as a graduate assistant. Tell us about these other versions of In the Language of Miracles.
Well, they're all versions that I wrote and then revised and then revised again. When we talk about my writing process, I learned, and this is my first published novel, and it's actually the first novel I've written. Before that, I only wrote short stories. But what I learned doing working through this is that the first couple of drafts, in my experience, don't really work out the way I want them to work out. And I've learned that the most important goal that I have is the novel itself as a work of fiction. As I kind of have to work through to get to that final goal, I've learned to be totally kind of detached from whatever versions I write until I get to the final version that I think represents the novel to its fullest potential, which means that if I wrote a couple of chapters and I spend a couple of months on them and they are beautiful and well done and I love everything I've written in them, but they don't fit the story, they don't help the novel, they don't help the plot line, then they have to be discarded. So as I did that again and again and again, I ended up with that half shelf of different versions of the novel, of chapters that I discarded, of total storylines that I had originally intended to include but that didn't prove to be essential or didn't prove to help the themes that I was interested in. So I just ended up kind of discarding those and trying again and trying again until I got to a version that I was relatively happy with, and then I started editing that version and trying to keep most chapters as they are.
One of the things that different authors have different answers to this, and I would like to know, as far as when you're writing this, and because you've written, like you said, a half a shelf of other versions, and that's not unusual. We learn the process, and sometimes, as writers, we will write something, and then we'll look at it and go, no, I don't like that. Let's do it again, and let's do it again until something comes out. And so at some point, you have to end the story, or you have to decide what's going to happen. So tell us about your story and you involving the grandmother and the grandchild and the situation that the family's in. Did you have already perhaps a way that you knew that it was going to end? Was the grandmother going to have an influence? Was she not? Were these neighbors going to befriend the family? There are a lot of different options there. I mean, I don't want to give it away, but I was just asking, if did you have a struggle with that as far as different endings, different ways to make the story turn?
Not really. I kind of knew from the beginning where this was leading. Okay, I don't want to give away too much either, but the ending of the story is one of the things that I was thinking about before I even started writing it. So I didn't struggle a lot with how is this going to develop. Are they going to end up being friends or not? I didn't have these main struggles. I struggled more with how to get there. Like from the beginning to the ending, and how to develop the plot line to reach the ending that I kind of foresaw and that I thought would be the most suitable ending for that particular situation. But certain plot, like minor plot lines, specifically with the grandmother. The grandmother ended up having a larger role than I had originally intended for her. I always knew she would be influential to some extent, but the more I wrote her scenes, the more I liked her. So she got a bigger share of the novel than she would have in the beginning. But it was mainly kind of like technical tweaking at the end. But the main ending was always there.
We are visiting with Rajia Hasib. She is the author of the novel In the Language of Miracles. And this is a novel, as she mentioned at the beginning, the fact that it's an American-Egyptian family, and they start getting settled in their house, they have the American dream, and then suddenly tragedy strikes. And then you have the old culture, Arabic culture, meeting with the American culture. And it sounds complicated, but it's not. And it's a very, like I said earlier, it's very interesting the way you twisted this plot around and just got everybody involved. And as you mentioned, giving Grandma a little bit bigger role. And I think Grandma will enjoy that.
I'm sure she would.
One of the things also, Rajia, is we have reviews. We've read reviews from various newspapers and book reviews. But tell me a little bit about your friends or family back in Egypt. What do they have to say about this novel?
Well, people are extremely supportive, extremely, extremely supportive. I'm actually, I've been thinking about that a lot lately, just because it's having your first novel published is such a huge event for me, especially for someone like me. That's all I wanted to do ever since I was a child. I wanted to be a writer. So it's a huge event, but I think the biggest blessing is really seeing how people are reacting to this. And so I've heard from childhood friends, school friends, childhood teachers even, friends of the family. So everyone in Egypt that has contacted me has been extremely supportive. I think they, and the ones who have read the novel so far have also told me that they liked it, but I think that they appreciate the amount of work involved more than anything. And the people who knew me for most of my life also know how passionate I am about writing and about reading. So I think they're happy for me for that as well. So it's been an extremely positive reaction so far, which is a wonderful thing to experience.
We're visiting with Rajia Hasib. She is the author of In the Language of Miracles. Rajia, a question that a lot of our listeners like to listen to the answer about this is, what do you like to read? What kind of genre? Who's your favorite author or authors? And just kind of give us an idea of what you like.
I like anything that falls under the umbrella of literary fiction. So I read various kinds of novels and short stories. I always struggle with mentioning one or two favorite authors. I have kind of like a handful of them. Recently, I just started reading Anne Beattie's new collection of short stories, The State We're In, the main stories, and she's one of my my favorite authors. I love her prose. I love her dialogue. She has a way of kind of getting the scenes to develop through dialogue without the reader actually noticing what she's doing in a way. She's so subtle. So I love her. I also love a lot of other writers who write about the immigrant experience in different ways, including Dwight Dantycott, for example. who's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Well, Rajia, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. Is there a webpage that people can go to find out more about the novel?
Yes, I have a webpage called RajiaHaseeb.com. It's my name, and they can contact me through the webpage. They can follow me on Twitter or on Facebook, and I'd be happy to hear from people.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us. We've been visiting with Rajia Haseeb, author of the novel In the Language of Miracles. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Thanks to our engineer, Evan Walsh. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.